Cody Robertson. Times Like Now can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Good night.
Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Susan Harrington. Her show, Our House on Fire, is on now at Waterstone Gallery through May the 1st, 2022. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Susan.
Thanks so much, Joseph. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I don't think I've done a show from Waterstone before, and I didn't even realize it was a collective. So, my bad, as I say. You joined the gallery a year ago, but you've had a lifetime since art school of making all different kinds of painting, but you've become a bit more environmentally aware in your painting in the last few years. You said you've done work with plastics and plastic stuff stuck on paintings. But here we have a beautiful show of what looks like botanical illustration. But you've called it Our House on Fire. So just give us an idea of the whole concept behind this.
Sure. Well, this show is really the result of an evolution of my, a personal evolution of my painting journey, I guess you would say. Many, many years of all types of painting and subject matter, from figure work to, you know, plein air to landscapes to gardens to, and then getting involved in an environmental theme, painting about wildfire, like you said, about plastic. So this particular theme came out of learning about the native and endangered plants of Oregon and wanting to do a series about those. And the theme, Our House on Fire, comes from what a well-known climate activist said when she says, we ought to all be acting as if our house is on fire, because it is. And I've been very moved by that concept, and so I wanted to do a show about that. And I've been making these paintings about endangered and native species for the last several years, and it resulted in the show.
You were very inspired by the Eagle Creek fire in the gorge, which burnt a lot of forest on the Oregon side of the gorge, you know, around Multnomah Falls. And you would go out and you started doing forest fire paintings based on photos, and then you would go into burnt forests and make these huge charcoal drawings of burnt trees.
Yeah, I mean, I should clarify, I didn't go into the burnt forest, but I did start making the charcoal drawings about burnt trees. They were on Duralar, this mylar substance. These were big, like 9-11 foot drawings. And I love the idea of making these drawings of burnt trees out of charcoal, which is made from burnt trees. Mm-hmm. So the idea was to hang these in a from the ceiling in a forest-like environment where you could walk through them as if you were in a burnt forest. Mm-hmm. So
the first picture, the picture closest to the reception desk in Waterston is of these yellow poppies. They're called fire poppies, and they only grow after fire when the seeds are activated by smoke, and they can just sit there for decades,
right,
waiting for smoke. So this is a beautiful bright yellow orange poppy, you know, these sort of wrinkled leaves, wrinkled petals, there are not very many of them, and they don't last long, do they?
No, they. My understanding. Now, I'm not a botanist, so everything I say is from my research. So, pardon me if I speak incorrectly to those to your listeners that are true scientists out there. My understanding is they only last for a couple of days before they shed their seed, and then the seed lies dormant again for decades until they get exposed to smoke. Which there's a whole range of plants that are referred to as fire followers, and these are plants that only come out after fire, you know, after there's been a wildfire or forest fire, and some need the heat in order to germinate their seed, where the seed has to be cracked open, you know, the shell or resin, and this one fascinated me because I'd never heard of a seed needing to be exposed to smoke before. I thought that was amazing.
And you've placed it in a kind of a dry landscape with a kind of a dry, dead-looking tree behind it and maybe some ocean. Tell us about the landscape, because each painting to me is a beautiful landscape painting and then a beautiful floral painting together. So what's this poppy background?
Well, the background is this poppy. I don't know that this has been seen and found in Oregon. I did take my references for this particular one because it was a series, part of the series on fire followers from Southern California references. So the background really could be anywhere near the coast where they're. Have, you know, Malibu, all that. There were whole areas down there that burned mm-hmm. over the last few years, so it could be anywhere, Santa Barbara, that it's kind of that area.
Is there a mixed message when you're saying, you know, our house is on fire, global warming is bad, but then look at these beautiful plants that appear after a tragedy?
I don't think that it's a mixed message. I think it's more, my goal would be to demonstrate the resilience of nature, because it is very, very resilient. And there's so much to be discouraged about in doing a lot of the work that you mentioned. I got discouraged, and that's why I kind of turned to painting these plants, because it's we've got a lot of work ahead of us if we're going to change the direction that things are going. And so my message here really is that, look, we can do this, and nature is resilient. It comes in and reconstitutes itself. It will heal, you know, if we allow it. Mm-hmm. So that's how I see these.
Same kind of thing here is you have northern wormwood. So this is a it's a red stemmed plant. It kind of looks like a succulent because the I don't know whether it is, but the leaves are very thin and sort of light green, and then it's a kind of a berry with a tiny flower, little yellow and red flower. It's extinct in Oregon, but you can find it in Washington in the gorge. So you've placed it on the Washington side looking south. You can see Beacon Rock on the other side of the river. So this is an example of a plant that's going away.
Well, that is my understanding. I don't know whether there have been efforts to, you know, repropagate it on the Oregon side, but everything that I researched about it said that it has, you know, been completely extinct from the Oregon side of the Columbia River, but that there are a few places left on the Washington side that still, still have habitat for it.
Mm-hmm. So it says you can find it around Hood River, on the other side of the river.
Yeah.
What did you do to place it in this context?
A lot of these I take reference images. I find reference images that are of the area that these plants live in general, and then I use my own artistic license, so to speak, to create environments that are out of my imagination, but are still accurate to the degree that they need to be for placing them in their locations.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, putting Beacon Rock in there was a way to put it in its place where it lives, but the background, other than that, was more, you know, fantasy.
Mm-hmm. The kind of buds and berries are very highly detailed. You know, the shading on them, the sort of eastern light capturing the spherical surface is very detailed. But then the rocks are a bit more, you know, they're kind of soft focus.
Sure.
You're not spending a lot of time, apart from the colors, which are amazing, these browns and blues. You're putting the plants in focus and the background out. And then also some of the leaves are actually not as detailed. So how do you decide on these?
For one thing, I kind of see these as plant portraits. So I do want the focus to be on the plant itself, you know, so it comes forward and is in the center of the landscape, that it is, that's what we care about here. And it helps to put it prominently that way. And I also experiment a bit with especially in these, some of these first, this is one of the earlier paintings of this series that I did. And I was still kind of experimenting with leaving parts of the plant or the image flat, more of a flat painting method, and then other areas to be more dimensional and highly detailed. So playing with that, mm-hmm. you know, giving different effects.
Usually the plant is in the center of the picture, and it's often the tallest element too. But you have this one, which is kind of the reverse. It's a huge painting. It's called Unintended Consequences. The Siskiyou Mariposa lily is the focus of the painting, but it's a small pink lily, very beautifully rendered with every little stamen and hair perfectly sort of picked out. And it has another flower below it that's drooping and not open. But then it's sort of in the bottom, middle, off to the right. And then everything else is all these other plants. Just name some of them.
Yeah. Well, we have a thistle plant, Western thistle. We've got Ranger's buttons, horses, mint, Brown's peony, and snowbrush, and of course, the Dyer's woad.
Which one is that?
That's the yellow.
That's the sort of little yellow grassy kind of thing you see everywhere.
Yeah, maybe. It is a plant that each one of these paintings has a story. It's sort of a narrative behind it. And the story behind this painting is that This plant, this Mariposa lily, is being endangered by the other plant called Dyer's Woad. And it, my understanding was, it had been cultivated. Dyer's Woad was being cultivated in Europe for its leaves, which they make indigo dye from, this beautiful blue dye. And the seed hitchhiked a ride over to the United States and made its way here to Oregon, in southern Oregon, and started taking over the habitat of different plants in this Siskiyou Mariposa lily, which is a native. Its habitat is being threatened by this plant in particular. That it, I think it does something like, it creates an environment in the soil that's too acidic, and the lily cannot germinate. Anyway, yeah, so that's the story behind this one. And the other plants in the painting are native. Some of them are more aggressive, like the thistle is a pretty aggressive plant anywhere it grows. But the one endangering it is the Dyer's Woad.
Mm-hmm. And then the background?
The background is a references an area in southern Oregon that's along the Pacific Crest Trail. It's just a kind of a generic background, but mm-hmm. if you were hiking the Pacific Crest Trail or along there, you might see something that looks like this.
So it's the North-South Trail crossing into California.
Correct.
From Oregon.
Yeah.
And you've got this beautiful blue sky with cirrus, you know, these very slight clouds mixed in. Again, you mixed in some brown or red with the sky.
Yeah, that's part of my underpinning. So all these paintings are done with, I have a full tonal underpainting underneath all of them.
What does that mean?
It's called a grisaille painting. So it's done, a lot of people do them in black, white, and gray. And so you get all of your values. It's a full value painting done underneath. And then after I finish that, I do the color on top.
Mm.
But I don't use black and white. I mix up my own colors, and I use a brown tone. I like using the brown tone I make because it's a lot warmer. And so you see the brown that you see in the sky on all of these, or on the clouds, is the underpainting showing through, where I've left it to show through, where I've used the color and then I've wiped it off so that it has some of that showing through.
If you took a photo at that point, the underpainting, would it look as detailed as this finished product?
Yes. Would you like to see one?
Okay, radio listeners, get ready.
Oh my gosh, well, hang on.
She's going through her phone.
I am going to my phone. Give me a minute. So I actually have some to show you of this painting. So here it is.
Okay, this is the painting. So it's like a sepia version of the painting, but everything, all the plants are picked out in white.
Well, it's their tones. You see their values. So it's not just white, they are completely modeled,
mm-hmm.
you know, and painted as if I was only doing it in brown.
Oh,
and,
wow. That's a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. It is a lot of work. It takes me hundreds of hours.
And then once you're happy with that, you get the colors out and you just go over it with a fine brush.
Yeah, Well,
if there is a big brush stroke in here, do you replicate it with a big brush or do you do...
Well, this is oil paint, so what I do on top of the color that is applied is a different consistency usually. It's called glazing, so I mix in medium into the color and then it's thinner. And mix in more opaque paint into the thinner paint. So I built it up. So that gives you an idea. All of these are done like that.
Mm-hmm. I'll stick them on the KABU website. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Susan Harrington. Her show, Our House on Fire, is on at Waterstone Gallery in the Pearl through May the 1st. Brown Peony 3. That's another Oregon native plant. What's the story behind this?
Well, this one, it's not an endangered plant. I just, I painted it for the first time in the painting we were just looking at, the big unintended consequences painting, and I just liked the plant. I thought it was so kind of strange and unique, and so...
It kind of looks like a fat tulip. I mean, that's not a very good description, but it's reddish petals that are curved in on themselves, and then it has these leaves that look like moose antlers in pale green.
Mm-hmm. I painted it because I like painting it. There's no other reason. So I've done a couple of different versions of it, and in some cases I made the leaves a little more more of a blue tint to them, because in certain lights they look like that to me. And then some in bright sunlight, they're more green. So, and the flowers can, the petals, they're very red in where I've painted them here, but they can tend to look a little more brownish red too sometimes.
And you put it in this much harsher, dry landscape. The background is rocky, and the ground cover looks sort of like heather or something. But when you've painted the same plants over here in a smaller painting, the background looks like deciduous woodland with, a lake in the background.
Yeah.
So how do you decide on where to place a plant?
Well, it depends upon how accurate I want to be and how much artistic lenses I want to use. Again, the focus is on the plant itself, and I just like the composition. So that has something to do with it, a lot to do with it too, is wanting to put elements in the painting that are going to make the composition work and make the plant stand out, in a portrait kind of way.
And they do, in both those cases, they do stand out, well off the background, right? As though your face is right up close. One of the three big paintings is called Kincaid's Lupine. Is it lupine or lupin?
I've always said lupin. Yeah. I don't know if
in
that's
England
correct.
They say lupin without the E on the end to confuse people.
I've seen it spelled both ways, yeah.
So this is a purple lupin that we all know from like junkyards and...
I don't know if that's the same plant.
This one's better.
There's a lot of different types of lupin. This is Kincaid's.
Kincaid's.
Lupin. Yeah. It's common, it's somewhat common in the Willamette Valley. It grows in the Willamette Valley, and I think I mentioned to you I've seen it down near Corvallis. And its habitat's being endangered by the Scotch or Scots broom and the Himalayan blackberry, which we all see everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
by agriculture, right? Fields just get plowed over,
right,
and they grow blueberries.
Exactly, that's what happens. And this plant's important because it is a host to the Fender's blue butterfly, which is one of our native butterflies that grows here. It's a very small, little, beautiful blue butterfly. If you have a chance, look it up. It's quite pretty, and it's its host plant. So if we lose this plant, we lose the butterfly too.
Mm-hmm. But in this picture, the lupin is, well, it dominates the center, but there are other plants arranged around it. Just tell us what they are. So there's purple lupin with sort of brown stalk or stem.
So on the bottom left, you have the milk thistle, which is a common thistle that you see all around the Willamette Valley. And I put it here because it is so common and invasive. And I also am fascinated by the pattern on the leaves and really wanted to paint it.
Yeah, it has this, what would you call that pattern? It's a kind of, I don't know, it's not camouflage, but it's a white on a spiky green leaf.
Yeah.
It's like a two-tone kind of a maze, I guess you'd call it. And I was going to say you went into a lot of detail on that, but when I look behind at the other plant, this blackberry.
That's a blackberry, Himalayan blackberry.
You've done a lot of work on the veins on those leaves, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just a different type of painting, really.
Right. Yeah, so it has the Himalayan blackberry. I've also put in the Scotch or Scotch broom. Because both the blackberry and the Scotch broom are the ones that are threatening, the plants that are threatening.
Mm-hmm. The yellows.
Yeah, of this king case lupin. So those are the main ones in here. And then it's in a field, you know, that's the placement of it. I try to make these big paintings as if you are in the painting. I like to paint them really large and try to give the plants a presence as if you're sitting there with the plant. You're surrounded by it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm on like a milking stool sitting down with my nose up against the plant.
Yeah, that's the idea.
But there is this background that you take a lot of care on, you know, the landscape painting. So this one, it's Willamette Valley, is sort of in a grassy, it's on a grassy hillside because there's a horizon. There's nothing to see but grass and then this beautiful sky. It's a partly cloudy day.
Yeah.
It's clouds with patches of blue. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how you decide what to do with the sky.
Well, the skies on all of these, I really do them kind of spontaneously. I don't plan the sky out that much. However, I do consider the composition of the painting. That's the primary focus of the sky, is wanting it to fit both with the lighting of the what's going on inside the painting so that it's accurate to the lighting effects of the lighting on the plants. If it's a cloudy day, I want it to look like the plants are in a cloudy day. If it's a sunny location, you know, sunny day, we want the plants to have an accurate three-dimensional form to them represented by the light. So that is the main consideration. But then the actual painting, I really do that very spontaneously as I'm working. It's very in the moment, I guess I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But do you decide where the light, what direction the light's coming from at the beginning?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
it has to be at the very, very beginning.
Yeah.
Before I do anything.
So you all pretty much, even if it's a cloudy day, you know, there's enough light to make a shadow, usually. So that is all fixed in your mind.
Right.
As you start work.
Yeah, I mean, I like having the light coming from one side because it gives me the opportunity to give everything a more three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if something spherical, you really get to show that.
Right, and if the light, like on, if it's a midday, noon, and the light's just, you know, shining directly down, I mean, you could still get shadows, and some of these have that look, but it's more difficult, you know. It's more fun to have something that's strongly lit, you know, from one direction or another.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Susan Harrington. Her show Our House on Fire is on our Waterstone Gallery on 9th Avenue in the Pearl, and it's up through May 1st, 2022. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Susan.
Thanks so much, Joseph. It's been a pleasure.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
está sintonizando KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM y a través de la internet en kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes.